Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Lawmakers forced to work over the weekend in Tallahassee on the school safety issue, and one place they'll be looking for money to pay for it is from their tax cut proposal.
Our priorities have changed, and so in looking at our tax package, there will be changes and, frankly, reductions.
Also tonight, Florida's U.S. senators weigh in on what they'd like to see in terms of gun reform.
The common sense solution is universal background checks. The common sense solution is get the assault rifles off the streets, and he won't touch that.
We'll also learn how the National Rifle Association works to shape American gun policy and why the latest version of the state budget has Florida's small rural hospitals more than a little upset. 1 week to go in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. This weekend won't have much rest and relaxation for one chamber in the Florida legislature. Signaling problems with a sweeping proposal aimed at making schools safer, Florida Senate leaders today ordered a rare Saturday floor session to begin debate on a measure that has become mired in controversy over allowing armed teachers. The Saturday session is planned as House and Senate leaders race against the clock to reach consensus on a bill before the annual legislative session ends on March 9th. Meanwhile, Florida lawmakers are walking back some of the proposed cuts in their tax package. Regan McCarthy reports the move comes as lawmakers work to find more money in their budget for school safety initiatives.
A plan that would have approved a tax break on aviation fuel is one of the first tax cuts to hit the chopping block.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This amendment removes the reduction in the aviation fuel tax that was previously in the bill.
That's Palm Coast Republican Representative Paul Renner. He says making the change is a matter of new priorities following the recent school shooting in Parkland.
Our priorities have changed, and so in looking at our tax package, there will be changes and, frankly, reductions in what we're doing moving forward, and this is a first step in that direction. That's not to say that in the final package we won't reconsider. We have to talk to our Senate partners.
Renner says the amendment is part of an effort to find additional money to fund school safety initiatives.
We're going to spend upwards of $400 million in school hardening, in school security, in mental health, and these other areas, and that money has to come from somewhere because we have a balanced budget. So in looking forward to that, this is a first step in that direction.
Tampa Democratic Representative Janet Cruz pushed Renner on whether the move is really an attempt to punish airlines. The Georgia legislature has stripped a similar tax cut out of its bill, reportedly in retribution after Delta ended its discount program for NRA members. But Renner says that is not Florida's motivation. Meanwhile, Tallahassee Democratic Representative Lauren Osley worries about the impact for small airports.
Any of you who have flown in or out of Tallahassee understand that we are in grave need of additional service and additional opportunities. And so I am in support of this exemption to help our attract the type of airlines and flights that we need here.
Another change Renner made to the bill removes a provision that would have kept local governments from banning the sale of any item that would be subject to sales tax. That provision raised concerns for a number of organizations, including animal rights activists, who worried the move could pave the way for more puppy mills. Jennifer Hobgood with the ASPCA spoke about the issue as the measure moved through committee.
It would revoke the authority of local governments to address the harm caused by the sale of cruelly bred puppies from puppy mills. Now, most puppies sold at retail pet stores do come from puppy mills.
Renner says the purpose of the provision was to protect against a patchwork of rules and ensure businesses could operate across county lines. But he says it's clear the proposal needs more work.
We want to make sure we have a free flow of commerce that, as a practical matter, cities and counties are not simply banning the sale of items that they don't like, and that we should do that, if we're going to do it, for health and safety at the state level. Those are the intended consequences of the preemption. Having seen some suggestions, and Representative Williamson raised some that we want to look at and make sure we get this right if we're going to proceed in that fashion, we are withdrawing that piece from the bill.
Lawmakers discussed the changes to the tax package on the House floor. The bill, as amended, is awaiting its final vote. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
While a lot of eyes are on lawmakers in Tallahassee to see how they handle the issue of gun reform, Florida's U.S. senators are also talking about what they'd like to see their congressional colleagues do, as we hear from Sasha Cordner.
On the floor of the U.S. Senate, Florida's Republican Senator Marco Rubio unveiled his plan he says will address gun violence in the wake of last month's mass school shooting in Parkland. Similar to what's included in Governor Rick Scott's proposal, Rubio, too, wants to create a new law dealing with gun violence restraining orders.
Even if law enforcement, school administrators, or family members believe that an individual poses the risk of committing an act of violence, they have very few options to prevent them from purchasing any gun or taking the guns away that they already have. Therefore, I intend to present a new law, perhaps in coordination with others that are working on it now, that will lead to the creation of gun violence restraining orders, something that will give law enforcement and close family members the option of obtaining a court order to prevent gun sales or remove guns from individuals who pose a threat.
He also wants to pass a law called the Stop School Violence Act that would provide federal grants to strengthen school security and infrastructure.
Provide school training for everyone, administrators, teachers, even students, to be able to identify threats and to report them. Something that really would be helpful is the creation of a school threat assessment and crisis intervention teams. There's a successful program in Los Angeles that does this, and that is a team that's a coordination between law enforcement, other state agencies, school districts, and the like, where they're all talking to each other about students and former students that may pose a threat of violence and intervene before they act.
He also wants to allow school districts to have more options to alert authorities to threats, as well as make sure prosecutors have the tools they need to go after those who purchase guns illegally. Rubio says his proposal also includes strengthening background checks and fixing holes in NICS, or the National Instant Criminal Background Check System.
And that's why I've joined with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, pushing for the immediate passage of Fix NICS. Something that will require all federal agencies and incentivize every state to fully report relevant information to the National Background Check Database. Because a background check is only as good as the information that is on it. And this deranged killer was able to buy guns on 10 separate occasions because he would have passed any background check, because none of the stuff that was known about him was reported to that system.
Still, during a recent CNN town hall meeting, Rubio did promise to reconsider his position on magazine clip sizes and look into increasing the 18-year-old age limit for rifles.
I absolutely believe that in this country, if you are 18 years of age, you should not be able to buy a rifle, and I will support a law that takes that right away.
Remember in the CNN town hall meeting that Marco said he would consider banana clips that had more than 10 rounds. Remember also that he was talking about raising the age to 21. I don't think either of those proposals were in Marco's speech yesterday.
That's Florida's U.S. Democratic Senator Bill Nelson. Calling Rubio a friend, Nelson did not answer whether he thinks the National Rifle Association got to Rubio. Not invited to President Trump's bipartisan talks on gun reform policy, Nelson made a trip to Tallahassee as lawmakers continue to work out a solution on the state level. Both the House and Senate plans include some sort of ban on bump stocks, raises the minimum age to buy any gun from 18 to 21, and could allow law enforcement to seize weapons from those deemed mentally ill and likely pose a threat. They also include a controversial provision allowing designated teachers to carry firearms on school grounds if they are deputized and complete law enforcement training. The governor's plan doesn't include the arming teachers provision, but Nelson says his plan is still weak.
That's simply because he's afraid of the NRA. He has an A-plus rating. He's taken $20 million of advertising from the NRA in his two elections. And the common sense solution is universal background checks. He won't touch that. The common sense solution is get the assault rifles off the streets, and he won't touch that.
Expected to announce a U.S. Senate bid, the term-limited Governor Rick Scott could face off against Nelson in November. And as for the legislature, they are expected to vote on gun reform legislation in the coming week. But Nelson says he expects the 2018 legislative session could last until Friday at midnight. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, we'll get a profile on the organization that has done more to shape modern American gun policy than any other.
And if they're angry at you and they believe that you're a traitor, you're worried. You're genuinely worried, and you actually have a right to be worried.
What supporters are calling a sweeping education reform bill appears to be on the fast track to passage in the legislature. The president of the state's largest teachers union joins us to say many of the bill's provisions leave a lot to be desired.
We're going to create a special voucher program to move some students out and leave the bully. I think that just makes the bully the winner.
And Florida's latest budget plan has health care providers in rural hospitals worried as cutbacks could put an end to some of their medical programs.
There's no way to make up that loss in our communities. We can't go out and develop a new service that has a high margin in it.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
Amidst all the turmoil concerning guns, it must be remembered that the trend in Tallahassee in recent years has been towards expanding rather than restricting gun rights. And the individual in Florida most influential in that trend has been Marion Hammer, the National Rifle Association's leading lobbyist. Investigative reporter Mike Spies recently wrote a profile on Hammer for New Yorker magazine. Here he talks about it with Luis Hernandez with member station WLRN in Miami.
She would be directly corresponding with, you know, the policy chief on a particular committee. And it's not that that's an illegal thing to do. Lobbyists do that. But what's different was that, or what stood out was that she was giving the government staffer directions on what language should and should not go in the bill, and also having oversight for what language should and shouldn't go in the bill, being able to veto decisions that she thought were either watering down the legislation or somehow, you know, moving it in the wrong direction. But she would have these conversations without, you know, CCing a lawmaker, without it was just as if she was the lawmaker.
One of the other things, too, is you point out that she is very active through emails, mostly with Florida's NRA members, and uses that as a very powerful tool.
It's a time tested method for her. So first, I should say, maybe I'll come back to that. You know, she's got, according to NRA legal documents, I have. The NRA says it's got at least 300,000 members in Florida. Former Senator Greg Evers, who recently passed away, you know, he suggested and others suggested the same thing, that her network really could consist of a couple million people. And one thing that's time tested is that when she reaches out to them and she tells them to do something, which is, you know, could be in one case to email the governor's office to say, don't appoint this person to a circuit court judgeship because of something he did in the legislature. They really follow through. I mean, you actually, and this is something all lawmakers will tell you, I mean, you'll actually get thousands of emails. So it's a very intimidating thing, not, in part because if you're someone who's in a Republican district, that's very concerning if you're running for re-election and you've got a primary coming up. I mean, these are people these are your constituents. And if they're angry at you and they believe that you're a traitor, which is usually the sort of language that they get painted in, you're worried. You're genuinely worried, and you actually have a right to be worried.
Do you think there's anything different about this situation now with the Parkland shooting that she'll be able to continue to push back on any kind of, because right now they're looking at gun legislation in Tallahassee. The governor even said everything's on the table for now. Do you think that she has the ability to push this back, or do you think this may be different?
The situation is different for obvious reasons, with very articulate students affected by this horrible event speaking out in ways that are just there's nothing that's ever compared to it before. Even perhaps more importantly is it seems like you have enough Republicans that are on board to even make these very moderate or pass perhaps, but I have to characterize as very moderate restrictions. It's very hard for Marion Hammer to punish a lot of Republicans if they in fact go along with the bills that are before the House and the Senate. But should be clear, it's still very conceivable that the things that she dislikes most about the bill, raising the minimum age and then also expanding the 3-day waiting period to all gun purchases, one or both of those things could potentially come out because there's something in that bill that Democrats really don't like, which is the prospect of teachers getting
arming teachers getting
armed.
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit of a poison pill. So you can imagine, I could imagine a trade happening. Maybe that comes out in exchange for getting rid of the minimum age requirement. And I think if the minimum age requirement gets taken out of the bill or the 3-day waiting period or both, I mean, she'll be able to and will at least claim a partial victory. At the end of the day, you know, Governor Scott certainly can, I think, influence what happens in the legislature. But he's only required to deal with what comes on his desk.
That was investigative reporter Mike Spies of the website The Trace. His article on Marion Hammer recently appeared in the New Yorker magazine, and he spoke about that with WLRN's Luis Hernandez. Joanne McCall with the Florida Education Association joins us on Capitol Report heading into this final weekend before the final week of session. You folks have some real heartburn with a certain House bill, I understand.
Yes, I assumed you're talking about 7055.
Indeed.
Yes, we have a lot of heartburn with that. 198 pages, 60 sections, and 58 statutes, all of which we don't believe it does anything much for the good of public schools.
What are the most onerous provisions of that as you see it?
So there's a couple of pieces. There's a lot of pieces because I just told you there's 58 statutes. But some of the pieces that are very troublesome to us, they have what's called in there a bully voucher. And when you just hear that and say bully voucher, well, how could you be against that? Bullying does occur in schools. That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. And it is a big issue. But what they're trying to do in this bill is if you are bullied by any standards, there's lots of things that you could say that you're bullied about, then you can get a voucher and you can go to a private institution rather than remaining there. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that is private and religious schools do not have to report any instances of any kind of discipline. So you have no way of knowing that where you're going to is better, number one. And we've left the bully in place. I'm not sure why we would do that. I'm not sure why we would not take advantage of trying to correct that problem. What this Florida legislature continues to do is cut the funding that does the programs to prevent bullying, like peer mediation, peer assistance and review, all the things, the stand up, speak out, all of those programs are being cut. And so, but we're going to create a special voucher program to move some students out and leave the bully. I think that just makes the bully the winner in that case and emboldens them. So I think that's the wrong approach. We think that's absolutely the wrong approach. And then it will just create, I think, a Pandora's box, so to speak. So that's one aspect that's in there. They also want to bypass local school boards so that if you want to open up a charter school and the school board says no, they're going to create a separate board that you could then go to so that you can make sure that you get what you would like in there. So we think that's taking away local control from the local school district. And then they also have in there a decertification bill. And it says that any instructional unit, union, that falls below the 50% density mark then would have to recertify. They would lose their contract and they would have to recertify. And they say that's because we're not legitimate and we're not speaking for the whole. I would say to legislators, then I'd like to know in your voting area, did you have 50% of all eligible voters that voted for you, I would suspect we would find that not to be true. As a matter of fact, Senator Baxley, who moved this amendment because it had been taken out and then put back in, he won his primary by like a 38-37-25. So if we're going to use that same standard, he didn't even get 50% plus one of those that voted.
Given the degree of controversy surrounding this, though, and the fact we are now headed into an electoral cycle when these folks would really like to get out of Tallahassee, go raise money, campaign, possibly get reelected, what do you think the chances are of this thing clearing?
I think it's going to clear. I do. What we'll see is maybe there might be some back and forth with between the House and the Senate, because the House version that came over, the Senate made significant changes. As a matter of fact, they did some changes that we liked. They make charter schools accountable. They make private schools accountable. They're making all of those things. They're providing after-school reading. That was Senator Simmons' piece that he really championed. So they're sending things back that the House doesn't really like. So we'll see if the House accepts that or doesn't. If the House accepts that, then I think it's a done deal. If the House doesn't accept that and sends it back to the Senate and strips it back and puts it the way it was, then we'll see if the Senate has spine. Because last year they were bullied into a 70-69, take it or leave it. We'll see if they end up in the same posture with 70-55. So if I was a betting woman, I'd bet it's going to pass if it stays in the current form that it's in.
And anything can happen during the final week of session, as we well know.
Absolutely. And the sooner they leave town, the happier we all are. And that means that we are now in a campaign cycle. And so we can get out and start trying to get folks elected to the Senate and the House that actually care about the constituents that they represent, rather than special interest lobbyists who have lots of money and want to profit off our students.
Joanne McCall with the Florida Education Association, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Now let's find out what else was going on at the Capitol today. We'll get that from Bob Brooks with our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
Committee substitute for House Bill 33, texting while driving. This bill would make texting while driving a primary offense in Florida. While the bill passed the full House, it has not made it through its last Senate committee, and unless the rules are waived, it will likely have to wait until next year. Senate Bill 1486 requires the Department of Health to adopt any rules necessary to encourage qualified physicians to relocate and practice in underserved areas. And it revises healthcare practitioner licensure eligibility for certain members of the armed forces and their spouses to include licensed dentists. A committee substitute was voted favorably by Senate Appropriations, but it must still go through the Rules Committee before heading to the floor. And Senate Bill 992, the C-51 Reservoir Project. This bill revises the requirements for operation of water storage and use for phases 1 and 2 of the C-51 Reservoir Project in western Palm Beach County. That's if state funds are appropriated. The bill passed Senate Appropriations and is now poised for consideration from the full Senate. Budget conferences will meet over the weekend, and the full Senate is slated to convene Saturday to continue the debate over school safety. All of those meetings will be carried live on the Florida Channel and at thefloridachannel.org. From the Florida Channel, this is Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, rural hospitals are having trouble providing health care to their patients. And Andrew Quintana reports, officials say the Florida legislature's budget plan isn't likely to help.
Tom Stone is the chief executive officer of Doctors Memorial Hospital in rural Perry, Florida.
We admit about 1,400 patients a year into the hospital and over 12,000 ER visits every year.
It may not seem like a large workload, but when the administered funding is significantly less than the cost of providing health care to patients, it can take a toll. Stone says rural hospitals like his are frequently underfunded.
Between 2015 and 2017, We were paid approximately $2.5 million less than the cost of what the care to provide to those patients cost us. That was, our cost is about 42 cents on the dollar, and we were getting reimbursed about 20 to 21 cents on the dollar.
The reason for the lack of funding is the cutbacks Florida lawmakers have made on Medicaid. It varies by hospital, but nearly half of rural patients rely on government plans like Medicare and Medicaid. Last year, Florida's legislature cut $521 million from Medicaid funding. $11.4 million affected rural community hospitals. Furthermore, additional federal funds that the state expected did not come to fruition. Stone says this has strong-armed many hospitals into cutting specific programs. DeSoto Memorial Hospital recently closed its maternity care services due to these budgetary restraints.
We're significantly being underpaid for the service we provide. Some would argue, well, that's the institutional's problem. But, you know, Medicaid is a program that we're mandated to participate in and to provide that care to patients. So if we're going to stay in business, exist in our communities, support our communities, be a pillar from an economic standpoint, we can't afford to take losses like that.
But Sanford Republican Representative Jason Brodeur argues the issue rural hospitals are facing is their rural nature.
You know, one of the challenges that rural hospitals has is the fact that they are rural. And so if you see a decline in the number of people going there, that is going to put any business in trouble.
On top of that drop in patients, many rural hospitals also face the issue of providing care to uninsured patients who may not be able to afford the care they receive. That is one reason hospitals are wary of the state's budget plan. The Senate's proposal offers $50 million in new funding for hospitals to balance last year's cuts. But the House's budget plan would include an additional $2.9 million cut to rural hospitals. Bruce Rubin is the president of the Florida Hospital Association. He says the House's budget continues the trend of underfunding.
The House proposal basically is uses a tiered formula identical to the one that was used last year, and it does not include the $50 million in non-recurring revenue that was applied last year. So the total cut is a lot higher at $651 million than it was last year.
Miami Republican Senator Anna Terry Flores says she cannot say for sure what the funding difference for rural hospitals will be between the House and the Senate, but admits it will come down to what the leaders of both chambers agree on during budget negotiations. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Andrew Nitana.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Andrew Quintana and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPRCapReport and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.